Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. Today I talk about the year at council so far. Yes, taking the month of August off does provide a valuable break, especially after a couple of very busy months with so many special meetings tackling hot-button issues. But while council's away, it feels like the time is right to stop and recap everything that has happened thus far around the horseshoe. 7 months at city council in 40 minutes or less is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. The council year began with a committee of the whole meeting on January the 16th. Deputy Chief Administrative Officer of Infrastructure Development and Enterprises Services, Scott Stewart, kicked things off with the annual report presentation of his division, although Stewart said he had preferred to think of it as a status report. What was keeping them busy, said Stewart, was slaying the dragon called the Guelph Factor. And considering the year in development so far, it's pretty clear that they are being successful. One of the themes at this year's council was immediately apparent. Tree canopy management. A staff report suggesting that 300 Water Street be taken off the Heritage Register had some committee members concerned that trees might immediately start being cut down on the property. Committee passed the recommendation, but it also passed an additional motion that the property owner, who lives out of province, be notified specifically that they do not yet have permission to remove the trees and thus allaying community concerns on the matter. $500,000 in leftover capital money from the purchase of new carts for solid waste in 2012 was allocated to the general capital budget. The brightness of a new LED sign for a Cork Street business was considered for potential restrictions during night hours, and an update on district energy were also presented. On the subject of DE, staff announced that they had amended the agreement between the Independent Electricity Systems Operator and Envita to terminate the contractual obligations and return their security deposit, while the city had amended its own agreement with Envita to reduce the land requirements and settle outstanding payments to the city. The new agreement between the IESO and Envita avoids about $60 million in losses and recoups $612,000 for the deposits. A full report on district energy would be discussed later in the spring. The January council meeting itself was straightforward, though it did come the day after the mass shooting at a mosque near Quebec City, and at the same time several hundred Guelphites gathered at the Muslim Society of Guelph for one of dozens of vigils held across the country to show grief and solidarity with Canada's Muslim community. Mayor Cam Guthrie said in council, "I want to assure you that Guelph stands with its Muslim community at this terrible and uncertain time." As for the business of council, Mayor Guthrie was nominated to potentially fill a vacant seat on the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, and a motion was brought forward by Ward 6 Councillor Carl Wettstein, referring to the Committee of the Whole, asking that staff be directed to review, analyze, and bring forward recommendations to update striking committee policies, processes, remunerations, and expenses. Both items passed easily. That brings us to February, as things got back to normal after an understated January agenda. The master plan for Ellis Park in the city's West End was approved, and two outstanding motions were removed from the audit committee's plate. A third item, the Fuel Security and Systems Audit Report, was also received by committee, offering a glimpse at how the city of Guelph processes and controls its fuel use as of the summer of 2016. The report looked at monitoring activities, the compliance of storage tanks, and whether the city held itself to the strict standards of current environmental legislation. The first planning meeting of the year brought the first of several new proposals for high-rises in the city. The developers of 45 Yarmouth Street returned to council with a new plan for a 12-story tower versus the original 14-story proposal for a mix of one- and two-bedroom units. The developers were commended for working more closely with staff to ensure that the city's concerns were properly addressed and that standards were rigorously followed, and the plan was approved unanimously by council. Also at this meeting, the demolition of a home on Harcourt Drive opened a brief debate as to the number of applications for renovations and demolitions that were coming forward for homes in the old university neighborhood. A delegate to council wanted to make sure that these applications met community standards and wanted to avoid the building of what she called monster homes in the area. A few days later, council was convened for a special meeting to discuss the Phase 1 findings of the Strategies and Options Committee. The committee, which was co-chaired by Chief Administrative Officer Derek Thompson and Guelph Hydro CEO Pankaj Sardana, was joined to discuss the possible future options for Guelph Hydro. Although Guelph Hydro is a well-run, well-organized company that most people, through public feedback, noted wasn't broke and didn't need fixing, the goal of the SOC was to be proactive in planning for the future. Hydro, in the years to come, was going to be about more than poles and wires, council was told. There were three recommendations on the table. The first was to not do anything and to leave Hydro ownership, as it was, in the hands of the city of Guelph. The second option was to sell Hydro outright, and the third was to merge Hydro with another local distribution company, or LDC. A fourth option, for Hydro to reach out and buy another LDC and merge with it, had already been discounted by the SOC. Basically, Guelph Hydro was making a calculation for future capital to make service and infrastructure updates to meet the changing needs of its customers in the 21st century. What those needs will be is still uncertain. Is the market going to be increasingly self-generated? Or will Hydro's present infrastructure still be needed as people turn to electric vehicles? Those were just a few of the questions to answer. In all, 13 delegates came out to speak on the matter. For the most part, speakers rejected selling Hydro for many of the usual reasons even a partial privatization of a government service or business is rejected. It seemed the opinion of the delegates that Hydro should find a way to be more adaptive to the future while still being a locally owned utility, and that even a merger with other utilities was problematic, as bigger does not always mean better. Council itself seemed to have difficulty in deciding what direction they wanted to go in. It seemed that sale was dead on arrival as councillors followed the lead of constituents on the matter. But council debated further on how much control they could exert if they decided to follow through on merger options. Amendments were proposed that should a merger go forward, then the city should demand a 50% stake in the new utility, essentially having a veto power for any further decisions regarding the theoretically merged LDC. Sardana said the most likely players in a merger would be Cambridge or Halton Hills, but in the end, council rejected the sale by a vote of 5-8 and accepted continuing explorations of a merger by a vote of 10-3. The meeting was 4.5 hours long, and in the end, the SOC would continue its explorations and research into the possibility of merger through further public engagement, employee feedback, and external research. Back to regular business, the final meeting of February brought two notices of motion. The first from Ward 1 Councillor Dan Gibson asked staff to prioritize opportunity for commercial investment and development in the York Road Intensification Corridor as part of the ongoing Comprehensive Commercial Policy Review. The second motion came from Ward 2 Councillor James Gordon, who asked to declare Guelph a sanctuary city, which opened some considerable controversy on social media. Gordon would later withdraw the motion in favor of what he called a more made-in-Guelph solution to the issues he was raising. In March, Committee of the Whole gathered again and discussed the initiation of a Natural Heritage Action Plan, which would include developing recommendations, strategies, and guidelines to protect and restore Guelph's natural heritage and protect surface and groundwater. Council was concerned about public engagement on this file, which was sure to generate a lot of interest from locals who all have their favorite open space that they are trying to protect. In fact, 1/5 of the city of Guelph is considered open space. Deputy CAO Stewart said that the proposed list of projects, when released, will impress the public. Somewhat less impressive, at least to some councillors, was key portions missed on the sidewalk's needs assessment. The point of the assessment was not the list, but the guidelines it offered to determine where the priority should be in creating new sidewalks, but many councillors used the occasion to point out where there were gaps in their own wards. The presentation of the Corporate Asset Management Plan and policy opened up an interesting, though depressing, possibility that the city's infrastructure gap was closer to $500 million than the originally stated $200 million figure. Of the city's $4 billion in assets, $1.2 billion are considered in poor and very poor condition, with parking, information technology, culture, and recreation as areas that need the most servicing. The point of the report is to help the city prioritize infrastructure needs and inform future budgets and provide input on the 2017 to 2026 capital and operating budgets. Despite the concerns, DCAO Stewart said that Guelph was now ahead of the curve in addressing these issues instead of lagging behind. The Transportation Master Plan framework was also revealed, showing that the city had a long way to go in terms of growing the use of cycling, walking, and public transit usage in the years to come. New pedestrian crossing treatments might help with that, as new street crossings can now be set up on low-speed roads where the limit is 60 kilometers per hour or less, and on low-volume roads up to 4 lanes wide, including roundabouts and intersections. Infrastructure Development and Enterprise Services asked that Council defer some decisions on matters like sign bylaw variances and demolitions to senior staff in a pilot project where Council would receive regular updates on all these proposals that come through City Hall. Ward 5 Councillor Leanne Piper moved to defer one clause until the comprehensive signed bylaw review comes back next year. The rest of Council agreed that this was a good idea and haggled on whether or not there should be a cap on the amount that staff can approve to spend on a project before it comes back to Council. A $3 million and $5 million cap both failed. As Mayor Guthrie pointed out, though, these are projects already approved and overseen by Council in the budgeting phase. Now, at the end of the month, at the regular council meeting, the Natural Heritage Action Plan and Sidewalk Needs Assessment Update were debated again on similar grounds, but both ended up passing. In new business, Mayor Guthrie brought forward a motion that would allow local groups and nonprofits to find a way to get first crack at surplus assets that the city is looking to sell, be it as small as an office chair or as big as an ambulance. The full debate on the motion would happen at the April meeting. Now, the April committee meeting opened up the can of fish called internet voting. The city had to establish the methods of how the 2018 municipal election would be run by May the 1st because of the fact that the provincial government had made ranked ballots an option for municipalities for 2018. Guelph had already taken that option off the table, though. But for 2018, City Clerk Stephen O'Brien proposed paperless ballot machines and expanded online voting so that people could submit their internet ballots on Election Day, as well as in the weeks leading up to it. Although O'Brien reported that there were no security or administrative concerns with internet voting in 2014, current events weighed heavily on the minds of Council as they started debating the report. There were also concerns of the list of voters maintained by MPAC, the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation, for which there is no easy way to make corrections and is not controlled by the City of Guelph. There was also a renewed concern about a lack of a paper trail for electronic ballots cast. But there was also a split on Council as people spoke out in defense of internet voting. Councillor Gibson said that to have internet voting in 2014 and then to take it away in 2018 constituted Council taking away access, especially in the wake of over 12,000 voters who increased turnout in 2014. Ward 2 Councillor Andy Van Helleman, who voted against online voting in the last Council, said that he had heard from a plurality of citizens that they voted via the internet in the last election, and that Council can't vote to take away a service because something might happen. Ultimately, in a close 7-5 vote, committee took internet voting off the table for 2018. A fierce fight online and social media and the press would unfurl in the month between committee and council on the matter of internet voting. But before April's committee was through, there was another controversial issue that needed to be discussed: chicken coops. Guelphites would now be allowed to have up to 10 hens on their property, but not in the front yard, and not within 25 feet of a business, school, or religious institute. Instead of keeping pens 50 feet from a dwelling, they will now have to be kept 10 feet away from any window or door of a dwelling and 4 feet from the rear and side lot lines. As well, there were additional regulations for proper storage of food for the hens and the proper lining for the coops. But back to online voting at the April 24th regular council meeting. In the 3 weeks between, the issue had only gotten hotter. 15 delegates were listed to speak that night, with another 300 correspondences included in the agenda package. The initial count on those letters to council showed support for internet voting versus support for the committee decision at about 8-1 in favor of internet voting. So how would council decide, given a month to think about it? Mayor Guthrie began delegation saying that he was hoping for a wholesome and respectful debate, and though he didn't say it, it was also assumed that it would be a lengthy one. The debate, it seemed, would hinge on accessibility. For Guelph's older population, for those with mobility issues or mental health issues concerning crowds, the argument would be that internet voting allowed them to participate in the democratic process with greater freedom of choice. The publicity of this debate, though, attracted some out-of-town experts. Alexander Essex, an associate professor of computer security at Western, said that concerns about the security risks of online voting were not unfounded, and noted that there's a fundamental friction between online voting and cybersecurity in that you can't have a secret ballot on the same system that records your identity. Essex also said that there are no recognized set of standards in Canada for online voting. It's the Wild West, in other words, and it doesn't have to be a state actor like Russia trying to upset the local democracy. It could be just someone who wants to watch the world burn. Other delegates noted that there's a trend going against online voting. Germany banned it, so did Australia. The matter has come before Waterloo Council twice, and our tech-savvy neighbor, known the world over for being a forefront of the information age and its revolutions, has refused to follow up on the possibilities of online voting. Twice. Dave Suffering, an internet tech security specialist, said that he would like internet voting to be the right move, but we're not there yet, and the practical truth of the matter is that it may be some time before security abilities will be able to address security concerns. Still, the argument to beat was the one in favor of giving people better access to vote. Jason Dodge of the Guelph Accessibility Committee said that although he recognizes the security concerns, he can't make it a reason to take internet of voting away on the basis of hypotheticals. Crossing the street has its risks too, he argued. Laura Root, who lives with a physical disability, said that it's sometimes hard for her to get out of her home, but she made a special point to come down to council to be heard on this issue. When the matter came back to council, Ward 6 Councillor Mark McKinnon put a motion on the floor to include internet voting in advanced polls, or in essence doing what the city did in the election in 2014. Security was still top of mind, and Clerk O'Brien said that while the voting system was susceptible to a DDoS or denial of service attack, there were redundancies in place and that the city asks a lot from its vendors to ensure quality. As council tried to explore various options to maintain accessibility or improve internet security, but as the clock came around to midnight, it seemed that council was getting closer to having to make a hard decision. At 12:38 a.m., council voted 6-7 against McKinnon's amendment to put online voting back on the menu. The marathon meeting went to 1 a.m., which was a great way to leave things for one member of the local media. April 24th was the final council meeting for Guelph Tribune reporter Doug Hallett, who retired from the Trib after decades of reporting. Things were a bit lighter when Committee of the Whole convened on May the 1st. Council joined local history buffs and members of the Parks and Rec staff in opening a time capsule buried in 1974 in the cornerstone of the Victoria Road Recreation Center. As to the business of committee, Clerk O'Brien updated on how the experiment with the Committee of the Whole has been going, and he was convinced that it's been going pretty good. From his point of view, the workload was streamlined, the city business was being handled more efficiently, and although there was some disagreement among councillors that this was the case, he was certain that they could proceed and make improvements as they went along. Councillor Gordon noted that the new system did seem to be working out well for staff, but he was curious if the public input factor had been negatively affected. Committee agreed to continue with the present structure and to be updated again after a year about progress. The only sticking point was who would act as chair, whether there should be a new set chair for every meeting, or to continue on with each councillor representing the various service areas as they take turns as chair. Committee went with the latter. In other news from this meeting, Guelph is winning the war on termites. Committee decided to keep school zone speed limits at 30 kilometers per hour in the interest of safety, and they asked staff to look at opening up the possibility of members of the public to buy naming rights for city assets. There was also a debate about the increased use of notice of motion. Councillor Wettstein said there was a perception that council is getting ahead of the public on these notices, and he noted that some of this was politically motivated, according to his point of view. He tried himself to bring forward a notice of motion on the issue, which failed at council the month before. Ward 3 Councillor June Hoffland proposed the matter be sent to staff for investigation into creating a new policy, which was passed in a vote of 8-3. In matters of budget, Mayor Guthrie asked that $1 million in the surplus be moved from tax rebate stabilization to infrastructure renewal so that the city can capitalize on time-sensitive projects that may become available for federal or provincial matching funds. Committee had to go in camera to discuss what possibility Mayor Guthrie was referring to. All that was said in the open council was that it had to do with the sale and acquisition of land downtown. Carl Wettstein, again, accused council of playing politics, but Mayor Guthrie's amendment still passed 7-4. May's planning meeting dealt with a couple of ongoing issues. The first was standards for mid-rise buildings and townhouses, which dealt with design, directions, and will include guidelines for parking and landscaping, the shape of buildings in relation to neighboring residential areas, and how to establish a pedestrian-friendly streetscape. Ward 5 Councillor Kathy Downer asked if it would have teeth, to which senior urban designer David DeGroote said that the standards would focus on compatibility and predictability in terms of those developments. The other major item was a follow-up on the affordable housing strategy, a review of the affordable housing target and secondary market. Staff's review confirmed that the 30% affordability housing target will remain with 25% ownership and 5% rental, but that the 5% rental target will be split between 1% for primary and 4% for secondary. The definition of secondary rental is a rented accessory apartment, purpose-built secondary rental unit, and investor units, condos, and single detached homes. Both sets of recommendations were approved. What should have been a light agenda at the regular council meeting on May 23rd turned into a free-for-all when the matter of committee of the whole structure came up again for council approval. Councillor Piper moved that the three recommendations be separated so that new votes would have to be taken for each recommendation rather than as a group, and on the first recommendation that Guelph City Council Committee of the Whole governance structure remain in place, the vote failed 5-6. Essentially, the vote meant that Committee of the Whole could no longer continue. A small constitutional crisis of a sort erupted. The work done by council is predicated by the work done in committee, and the city could not immediately go back to a standing committee structure, and the next Committee of the Whole meeting was just 2 weeks away. After a five-minute conference, Clerk O'Brien said that council could suspend procedure and do a vote of reconsideration with the support of two-thirds of the whole council. Councillor Wettstein agreed to the revote but noted that council is not as committed as it needs to be going forward with the committee of the whole structure. In the end, council voted unanimously to reconsider, and a new vote was held on recommendation number one, and this time passed 10-1, with only Councillor Piper voting against it. With council unimploded, they moved on to the contentious issue of 13 Stewart Street, a lovely old home in the East End that had a lot of neighbors and heritage nerds concerned that the owners, John and Pamela Rennie, were getting ready to tear it down. Massive renovations had been happening inside the home, and there were no demolition permits requested with the city. Eric Davis, a representative of the Rennies, said that there was a mold problem inside the house, hence the extensive construction, but Piper, herself a heritage nerd, pointed out that every architectural element inside the home had been gutted, even things and areas that don't get moldy. Mayor Guthrie asked Davis directly when the last time Heritage Guelph reached out to the Rennies, to which he said he knew of correspondences, but he wasn't sure when. 4 is the number, though. That's according to Susan Radcliffe of the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario. According to Radcliffe, numerous requests from her group, neighbors, and the media have been met with silence. Ed Solga, one of those neighbors, said that the day this matter was before Heritage Guelph, there was a backhoe dismantling the electricals at 13 Stewart. In his words, it was pretty clear that the house is being readied for demolition. The problem here, according to staff, is that when it comes to privately owned homes, heritage issues are self-policing. The matter seemed obvious, and Mayor Guthrie himself admitted that 13 Stewart Street seemed like a clear-cut case of a property deserving a heritage designation. In its report, staff is recommending that council publish its intention to designate 13 Stewart Street according to provisions of Section 29, Part 4 of the Ontario Heritage Act at the end of the meeting, and it seemed like from the tenor of the room that things were going to go that way. Councillor Gordon summed things up by saying that the property owners had lost the faith of the neighborhood on this, and their recommendation was passed by a vote of 10-1. Committee of the Whole proceeded as usual on June 6th as they reviewed the consolidated and unconsolidated financial statements from the year before. The bottom line on the unconsolidated statements is that the city is in a stable financial position, which ensures that current levels of service and infrastructure without any service cuts to cover the gap. Although in 2016, while revenues did increase by $15 million in expenditures, it also went up $10 million, mainly due to an increase of $6.8 million that goes to salary and benefits. The June committee meeting was also where this September's transit alignment was officially revealed to council after months of public feedback and discussion in the media. Two other transit matters were brought to committee, including a one-year pilot program for a $1 special event transit fee for events at the Sleeman Center and the River Run Center. The other item was a request to work through the Transit Procurement Initiative, TPI, to buy 9 specialized vehicles for mobility services. The TPI is a 5-year program that allows Metrolinx to work with municipalities for the joint procurement of specialized vehicles and the related transit equipment or technology. half the cost of those 9 mobility buses and another 11 transit vehicles is being covered by public transit infrastructure funds, PTIF, through the federal and provincial government. Committee also approved a motion through Councillor Gibson to direct city staff to work with the Climate Change Office to find a way to transition the corporation, its buildings, and fleet vehicles to a net zero or similar low carbon designation. A report on this will come forward at the end of the year. The first of 2 special council meetings for the month took place on June 13th. This would be the second meeting of the Strategies and Options Committee, and this time they were looking to be directed by council to conduct further discussions and prepare preliminary business cases to assess any potential mergers. But a fundamental question was stumbled upon in the course of deliberations. If we agree that Guelph Hydro is doing the job that its customers wanted to do, why are we talking about merger? It was a reminder that while Hydro was certainly being proactive in talking about the future, most people in Guelph still have their eyes on the present, and those eyes like what they see when they look at Guelph Hydro. Councillor Gordon would add later that if council decided to pursue merger with another utility, it will need to make a compelling case for the community because a lot of people move to Guelph because they think that smaller is better. In spite of ongoing concerns, most of council agreed that it was better to proceed and keep their options open than stop now. The 3 recommendations were accepted, 9-3. 2 weeks later, Hydro came before council again in the form of the shareholders meeting for Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc. In the last year, GMHI has been divesting itself of the assets of District Energy, so among the decisions made by council, the shareholders, was to transfer control of Eastview generating assets to Guelph Hydro, transfer solar control of solar assets in a split decision to the City of Guelph and Guelph Hydro, and that Envita reserve funding be repaid by the revenues generated from the investment on a repayment schedule to be established by the City Treasurer. On the bright side, Guelph Hydro is exceeding provincial conservation targets by leaps and bounds, and Guelph is at the lower end of the pack in terms of cost per customer. At the regular council meeting for June, the major item had to do with redrawing the boundaries of downtown Guelph, but an item from Committee of the Whole suddenly became contentious, the outdoor aquatic facilities in Parks Report. Ward 1 Councillor Bob Bell took a stand on the basis that the report did not deal with the equal distribution of facilities in the city, which was a peculiar stand to take because the main point of the report was to get council's approval to convert 2 wading pools at the end of their lives into splash pads sometime in 2018. Those pools were at the Sunny Acres and Exhibition Parks. A third clause was added to the recommendation asking that staff consider equitable distribution in a future report. As to the main point, Guelph did approve the exploration of the expansion of the area covered by the Downtown Business Improvement Area, or BIA. Presently, the downtown border forms a rough pentagon from Carden Street to Norfolk to Yarmouth to Woolwich to the CN train tracks, but the new borders will extend to everything north of the tracks, east of Dublin, to just past Paisley, just west of Norfolk up to London and down the river back to the tracks. The Downtown Guelph Business Association has been going about the process of getting feedback in the proposed expanded area through this summer. July's controversy began at Committee of the Whole with the presentation of the Guelph Active Transportation Network Design Guidelines and Feasibility Study. The purpose of this report is to outline how the city might be able to create a network of off-road trails that could connect all parts of the city in a proposed map. It wasn't easy given that the study calls upon the research of various master plans on trails and cycling that are currently in progress, so nothing presented was really etched in stone. But that didn't stop council from opening a contentious debate on a couple of fronts. Ward 4 Councillor Mike Salisbury pointed out that there were no trail options in the West End, south of the train tracks. Councillor Downer asked that staff look at moving the crosswalk on Gordon near the boathouse, and many councillors argued whether it was money well spent on winter maintenance for trails. Controversy was also the word of the day for the last planning meeting before summer break. A townhouse development at 19-59 Lowe's Road West had its second bite at the apple with a smaller number of units and other compromises, but these did not address the concerns of area residents about drainage issues and area flooding. An L-shaped building at 233-237 Janefield Avenue, north of the Holiday Inn, promised the addition of 180 units and a lot more traffic, which is a concern for those people who live in those neighborhoods because there are already a lot of minor accidents on the Janefield Hill. And finally, another high-rise might be coming to downtown at 71 Wyndham Street. For this one, councilors had concern about the building being so close to the river, especially considering the plans for an underground parking feature. Another special meeting on July 17th concerned downtown development. The Wilson Street Parkade was finally approved to proceed, but at an inflated cost of just over $22 million. An additional cost of $8.5 million because plans were altered to create more parking spaces at the new Parkade with a little less than 500 spots in total. The plan would eventually mean cost savings, though, for the city, because creating a bigger Parkade at Wilson Street meant that the city wouldn't have to build a Parkade at Fountain, and they would still have more parking than they do right now if they built both Parkades. Construction on the Parkade is expected to begin sometime in early 2018. The final council meeting before summer vacation saw a rehash of some of the debate about the active transportation network design guidelines and feasibility study. Clarity was offered about the winter maintenance budget, noting that this was not $270,000 in new spending, but a mere $100,000 in new spending that would come forward at budget time in an expanded package. One delegate brought a picture of footprints and wheel treads in the snow down a trail to prove that, yes, trails in the city do get used in the winter, and they should be passable. Eventually, the recommendations were passed, and the design guidelines will now start being transformed into more of a design plan. The final item before adjournment was a closed meeting investigation report from a complaint filed concerning three closed meetings in September and October 2015 and October 2016, saying that council had contravened the Municipal Act. The subject of the closed meetings was the Brant Community Hub, which would involve a couple of acres of Brant Park that the city would purchase and turn into a community center akin to Sheldale at the corner of Willow and Dawson Road. A number of neighborhood residents were viscerally against this, not wanting to lose local green space, but Amberley Gavel, a firm that specialized in closed meeting procedure investigations for Ontario municipalities, investigated those meetings and found that council was properly in closed session. At the same time, though, Amberley Gavel warned that the exceptions to the open meetings rule are discretionary and that council should always strive to err on the side of openness and transparency when determining whether to exercise its discretion to consider a matter in closed session. Having said that, Mayor Guthrie read out the minutes from the closed meeting on November 28, 2016, in the interest of transparency. Staff were directed to, at that meeting, draft a non-binding offer to lease and/or a letter of intent between a suitable community partner and the City of Guelph for use of the two-acre lot at Brant Avenue for a community hub, which would form the basis of a long-term lease agreement. A previous motion from the October 26, 2016 closed meeting was then rescinded. So with that, the first 7 months of City Council in 2017 came to a close. The council calendar will pick up again on September 5th with Committee of the Whole. Budget deliberations will begin sometime later in the fall, and considering that this is the last budget before an election, it should be interesting watching that unfold. Stay tuned for all those deliberations and all the developments on council by following Guelph Politico. And that's all for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can go to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico and donate, because if you like locally sourced independent media in the City of Guelph, we like it if you could consider please donating. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.